Hey, 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 what is up, email geeks? You're tuning into the Email Design Podcast, where we talk about all things email design, development, and marketing. We are your hosts. I am Kevin Mandeville.
And I am Jason Rodriguez.
And we are coming at you today with a rapid fire Q&A session from the Litmus community. We're taking your questions and giving back our best answers to hopefully help you along your way to email enlightenment.
So the first question is actually coming from a guy named Joe Williams, community user, that was asking about plain text and HTML email. So I think there's a little bit confusion on Joe's part as to how HTML emails and the plain text versions work together. So he's talking about, you know, he dumps in his HTML into his ESP. He sees that there's a plain text field for it, but he's not sure as to how that's actually sent. And when he looks into that multi-part MIME and all the content types that go along with sending email as an email marketer, then he starts getting down this rabbit hole of how you actually program that using, you know, something like C# or PHP or whatever, you know. So it seems like there's a little bit of confusion as to how these two things work together. So in a nutshell, when you're sending an HTML email, you're actually sending two versions of that email using this content type multi-part MIME that bundles those two messages together into one. So it's sending your HTML file, which is what most of us work on and think about when we're building email campaigns, and then it's sending a plain text file along with that bundled together, which is just the plain text version of that. So Joe, I would say when you're working in your ESP, you know, you upload your HTML email, but that plain text version doesn't really come out of your HTML. It's something that you either have to write up yourself, or a lot of ESPs have that sync from HTML feature that will essentially strip out all of the HTML tags, all the CSS in your email, and only display the text from that. So you can do that in most ESPs. I'm not sure exactly which ESP he's using, but most have that feature where you can sync it from the HTML. And we like to use that as kind of a base to work on, so we don't have to draft the entire HTML longhand, you know, and then upload it. So we sync it from the HTML, and then we do some formatting tricks. It's kind of that old, like, ASCII style artwork that you might be familiar with, that plain text art, to make that plain text version look good. And then when you hit send from your email provider, then that bundles it up using that multi-part MIME content type and delivers the message to your subscribers. I don't know if you had anything else to add to that, Kevin. Best.
I'm really happy that we don't have to code plain text into an actual HTML. I'm very happy that those are two separate entities. There's enough going on in an HTML email that we shouldn't have to worry about that. It could be an issue with the ESP or just something wrong going there, but it should be pretty standard for all ESPs to include it, even just for deliverability purposes. I don't think an ESP would not include that unless you're like a transactional service maybe of some kind for render testing. But this should be pretty standard for all providers.
Yep.
All right, moving on to Fred Miller's question. He asked about using fractional pixels in font size and letter spacing. So if you have something like font size 16.5 pixels, letter spacing 0.2 pixels, he was saying that, you know, I've been told that fractional pixels can cause errors, but he's not seeing any issues when he's testing. And what I would say is that this is one of those myths that fractional pixels won't work in an email. They'll work just fine for the most part. There may be some clients that may not use them and it'll round it perhaps or convert it. And I know Outlook kind of uses its own thing. I mean, Outlook's going to convert things to points actually for the Microsoft Word rendering engine. But even that is okay using fractional values, as it often it'll, you know, convert standard pixels to a fractional point anyways. So I would say that this is just one of those things that it's very much a myth that you can't use it, especially since, you know, there's so many clients now that are either reliant upon WebKit as a rendering engine, or it's a webmail being rendered by a browser. These values are just fine.
Yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't worry about it too much. I would say I don't think I would ever use fractional stuff, just because it seems like the difference between a fraction number and a round number is so small that you won't really see that much of a difference. So I'd like to keep the code a little bit cleaner and like more readily readable, you know, but yeah, I don't think you'll run into any problems.
Yeah. Either. If you're doing it for font size pixels, yeah, I would never do that. It does make sense for letter spacing though.
Yeah.
As that's a little bit more, you can easily tell the difference.
Yeah. That kind of scaling and stuff between those letters. Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no big problems there. All right. The next question, it comes from Jesse Monson. He's talking about how he can't see his alt text in iOS and on Yahoo. So essentially he has alt text in there, but he's just seeing empty boxes where the images should be. So he's wondering what happened to his alt text. And again, our good friend Remy, commented in and essentially said, you know, it's most likely that your alt text is too long. So when that happens on iOS, then it won't display it. It'll just make it invisible. And that's why we don't see your alt text. So a good way to combat that is either by using shorter alt text, or you can play around with the font size on that image tag, which allows you to style the alt text and make it a smaller font size. Play around with formatting that way so that your alt text is visible again. So kudos to Jesse for using alt text. You know, it's a very handy thing that we should all be including on most of our images. So it's good to see he's using it. But if you are running into the invisible alt text on iOS, then just check your font size or the length of your alt text and see if it's a little bit too long, that it's kind of hiding it away.
Yeah, the alternative is that you could slice up the image and put the alt text on separate lines if it was really, really critical and you needed it. And sometimes that can help you because then you can even bump up the font size if you want, depending on how important things are or how you want to style them. So yeah, just check your font size, your length, splice it up if you want to. Those are sort of the tricks up your sleeve at your disposal for styling that alt text and making sure it's visible.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break from questions and just talk a little bit about our conference that's coming up pretty soon here. So we've been doing this for a long time. It was formerly the Email Design Conference, RIP. It's now referred to as Litmus Live, but it's, as far as I know, like all the conferences I've experienced, it's the best conference for email marketers, designers, developers. It's just all of your email geek friends essentially hanging out in a room talking email. Tons of great speakers, you know, the big time people doing really interesting stuff in email are always speaking at our conferences, but it's coming up this summer and I guess this fall too. But the first one kicks off in Boston on August 2nd. We have a conference in London August 29th, and then we're coming to San Francisco on September 21st. So three chances to catch Litmus Live, all the great speakers, all the great content, tons of sessions, all of your friends hanging out and just geeking out on email as hardcore as you could possibly imagine. So we love it. You know, Kevin and I always go, we run workshops. We help run the sessions. We're just hanging out and talking about Litmus, talking about email, all of that good stuff. So hopefully you will be joining us this year for Litmus Live. You just go to litmus.com/conference, check out all three cities. You can get an idea about tickets. You know, if you have to convince your boss, then we provide good reasons to let them have you go to Litmus Live, all of that good stuff. This year, too, we're partnering up with some of our friends in the email industry to give away some tickets. So we're giving away a ton of tickets this year with our friends over at Mailjet, SendGrid, Taxi, MailChimp, Emma, and LiveClicker will be releasing some information soon. So we have this cool blog post that we will put in the show notes too. If you're looking to win a ticket, if it's a little bit too pricey for your blood, then you know this could be a great way to attend one of the city's conferences. So each company is kind of doing their own little contests. A bunch of them are having you design an email kind of saying why you should go to Litmus Live, and then they'll pick their favorites as the winners. MailChimp has kind of an entry form kind of thing where they want you to describe why you should go to Litmus Live, all that good stuff. So if you're in the mood to talk shop with the, you know, greatest collection of email geeks in the industry, then definitely check out litmus.com/conference for the Litmus Live info and check out that giveaway, all those giveaways, and hopefully we'll see you there this year.
It's a staple event of the year. You got to be there.
Yeah. It's huge, yeah. It's the tentpole conference for the year, yeah.
Yeah, and we're both doing workshops. They're flying fast. Tickets are selling out. So if you want to get involved, be sure you get them all before they're gone. All right, our next question, going to be talking about linking to external style sheets, which is actually one that I love talking about. So, yeah, Jennifer Genest asked this question. What's the current status of external CSS in email? And so this is one of those things where, again, I think it's another big perception that you can't use external CSS in email, which is simply false. Actually, the majority of email clients actually support external CSS, mm-hmm. thanks to the WebKit rendering engine. And so I should have looked up the exact figure. I don't have an updated figure, Jason, but it is the majority. I mean, it obviously it fluctuates with the WebKit a market share, but you know, even desktop apps, mobile apps, those typically support external CSS. The only ones that don't really are the webmail clients. So yeah. The Gmails, Yahoos, and whatnot. And that's because, you know, they're just trying to render the email inline. It's not an iframe. So they're trying to render it inline typically.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but this is using external style sheets is actually how we do a lot of our cool emails by pumping in, you know, that external content and stuff through that external style sheet for some of our more dynamic emails like the Litmus Live emails.
Correct. Yeah. So like the Twitter feeds that we do in our emails, for example, we actually use external CSS to power that. And we do have a backup of dynamic images,
yep.
but yeah. dynamic images just aren't always the best, right? It's like they're yeah. heavier. You can tell that they're an image. The quality isn't as high. Whereas when you're using CSS, you have more control over the styling, the layout. It's more retina friendly for displays, etc. For that type of implementation anyways. So yeah, that's how we do it. And I wouldn't say that this is, you can't rely on external style sheets yet really because of the webmails, and obviously Gmail is such mm-hmm. a big factor when it comes to that. But if you're trying to do some cool progressive enhancement stuff, you can absolutely throw it in an external style sheet. And then that way it's just easier to manage and maintain from there.
Yeah, so not only is it a myth that it's not supported everywhere, because it is supported on a lot of email clients, but it's actually a super handy tool, so we should keep that in mind. And yeah, I feel like we need to do like a myth-busting episode and just like collect them all up and just break them down and kind of educate everybody about the myths of email design, but maybe that'll be in a future episode. Talk a little bit. I know you love targeting things in email, Kevin, so talk a little bit about Balint Fulop's question in the community.
Yeah, he's got a great question, and he says, or he asks, is there a way to target the iOS version only of Gmail, but not Android? So I want to target the Gmail app, but only the iOS version and not the Android. And the use case for that is he's trying to display a link to either the App Store or the Google Play Store based on the device. And so you know, he says he hasn't found a media query combination yet to where he could target separately. And actually, the short answer is that this is actually one of those times when targeting through CSS, as far as I know, is not really your best option here, because especially now that both Gmail iOS and Android supports the embedded CSS with Gmail's rendering update last September, there isn't a great bulletproof way to differentiate between the two. So the best way to go about this is you actually want to use server-side detection instead, so that you can use PHP to pipe in an image file or content rather, because you're going to want to include a different link as well, that points to either the App Store on iOS or Google Play Store on Android. And that's really going to be your best bet for serving up the different content, is using server-side detection so that you can say, okay, well, here's the actual device and the app that's being used.
Makes sense to me. Yeah, I haven't played around with that too much. I know the agency I used to work at, we did some server-side stuff like that, but yeah, I haven't done it recently, but that's probably your best bet.
Style Campaign has done a ton of server-side stuff.
Yeah. That makes sense. They would,
yeah. Yeah, so I would check out some of their blog posts. Go to stylecampaign.com. I think they're one of their best recent examples was their SVG countdown clock that used some server-side detection there. So if you are looking for some inspiration, I definitely recommend checking them out.
Awesome. So the next question comes from Adam, who was having a problem with iOS 10 and responsive emails. So essentially, has a responsive email, and when he views it on Apple Mail and iOS 10, he's running into some weird scaling issues. So this is something we actually talked about in our blog posts. That's 9 things you need to know about email in iOS 10. So iOS 10 introduced some new auto-scaling features where people were running into issues where their emails were being auto-scaled. They would be displayed off-center. Things were just looking a little bit funky. There's essentially 2 things you need to do to combat this. The first is that you should have a style of padding 0 on the body tag of the email. And then the second is that you should include this meta tag that uses the name attribute of with a value of x-apple-disable-message-reformatting. So it's a little bit of a mouthful, but it's in the blog post there. But there's a bunch of these meta tags that are useful for, you know, targeting behavior in things like Outlook and Apple Mail, for web browsers, stuff like that. So this is the one that kind of targets Apple on iOS 10 and tells them not to do that auto-scale reformatting. So hopefully with those 2 fixes in, this will help Adam out with his responsive problem. But just kind of picking through his code a little bit too, you know, it looks like he's kind of doing that traditional responsive approach. So that generally works well everywhere except especially with like Gmail's updates and stuff like that. It's pretty reliable method. But one way to combat that too, if you are still running into issues, is use something like hybrid coding to be a little bit more defensive around your coding and make sure it works everywhere without having to worry about it too much, you know. But yeah, checking out that meta tag and using that padding 0 on your body tag should hopefully alleviate any responsive issues and auto-scaling issues that you might see on iOS 10 mail.
Yeah, and I've never really run into this issue. And I think part of the issue, and this kind of goes to a whole separate argument, we're not going to get completely into this right now, but I think a lot of this stems from just over complexity of your code. Like your code does not need to have so many tables and this and that. Like oftentimes I think this is just a result of just too many tables, too many things that's just causing weird behavior. It's like often email can be really stripped down to a few, you know, core tables if you're using that, you know, and if you're using base fluidity and then constraining after that to, you know, get around non-embedded CSS support, non-media query support, you should be pretty good most of the time, especially for things like iOS, which is pretty good. So definitely I say if you're running into issues like this, you know, obviously try to include the fixes, but where can you condense? Where can you make things less complex? I think that can really solve a lot of issues for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I notice in that email example too, is there's, you know, it seems like, yeah, very much a legacy email template that's been used since, you know, 2006, 2007 or something, just with how complex it is. And then to make it responsive, there's just a bunch of classes slapped on every table and every table cell. And then those are targeted with dozens and dozens of different media queries. So it's very, very complex. It seems very fragile. So if you break that down and simplify it and use, you know, 1 or 2 media queries and much more simpler targeting, then it'll be that much more robust and that much easier to maintain too. I think maintainability is a huge aspect of email design that a lot of people don't think about. So yeah, I'm with you, kind of simplifying, breaking things down a little bit better, using that fluid by default approach and then constraining it after the fact is definitely the way to go here.
All right. So our last question of the day is coming at us from Matthew Paley, who is asking about print styles for email. He says, so normal web page development, you can develop a print.css set of styles. Is there any research or successes here in the email world? And this is actually a really interesting question. I would say it's not one that's really been delved into too much in the email community. And I think a large part of that reason is because most clients probably aren't going to support this natively. So let's say you're using Gmail or something and you go to print. Well, you're just going to print the browser version of the Gmail, or Gmail even has their own. If you go to print, like you can, it has one of the options in their dropdown to go to print. It's actually just going to open up not the actual web version, but Gmail's web version of the email. And it's just different. So I think you run into a lot of issues like that in email where, unfortunately, it's just not going to be applied. Now, you can use this for the standard web version. So if somebody clicks to view online and then prints from there, you can use that as a method for print sort of friendly styles. And I think it's important to note, I guess I should say, for people who don't know, just like there's an app media screen, there is an app media print. Mm-hmm. And that's why there are different sort of declarations that you have there to differentiate between the environments. App media print is one of them, to where you can apply CSS styling that's only applicable to the printable view. And I'm sure a lot of email geeks might not even know that, Jason, but it's a good way to optimize for the print view when you don't want to use all this color or whatnot. You want like a print friendly version, might serve a different layout, etc. But I just think for email, it's just probably often not worth the time of development for the relatively low audience of people who are printing.
Yeah, the one use case I could see for something like this, which I haven't seen in the wild, but I think it'd be a great implementation, is for retailers that send coupons and stuff. So there's still retailers out there that send coupons via email that has like a barcode or whatever in it, you know. But for whatever reason, they force you to print that out and take it into their business, their brick and mortar stores, instead of just like having it on your phone and they can scan it off of that. There's still some out there that do that. So I'd love to see in that case, yeah, they have essentially like a print this coupon CTA that just links to the web version, and then you print it through that, and that uses that at print media query, or uses, you know, loads a print.css file to control that layout. But yeah, for most email marketing, you're not going to run into these issues where it's a huge problem. So I don't think it's a lot of people haven't done a lot of testing around it.
I could see billing or transaction emails like that. That can also be a really good use case for trying to serve up a nice printed style of the email. But it's one of those things. You got to know your audience. Definitely. And this is something you can look at through Litmus Email Analytics. So just go to litmus.com/email-analytics to learn more. You can see how many people are actually printing your emails if you're using Litmus Email Analytics. So it's one of those things. Know your audience, know your use case. And I think, like we just mentioned, it might be something to where you're probably not going to invest every single email doing it, but you might have certain use cases where it's really helpful and useful. So, all right. Well, yeah, if you want your questions answered here on the podcast, go to litmus.com/community and ask away there. I mean, Jason's seeing all the questions. Literally, you get every single email about the community.
I do. I see everything, yeah.
Jason is the all-knower. So we see everything. We want to grab your best questions. So go to litmus.com/community. It's the best Q&A board. Not only are we here talking about it on the podcast, but I mean, how many? We have hundreds, thousands of email geeks helping out other people to get the best answers. So definitely check it out. It's like the best, I don't know, it's the best resource. I mean, it's even helpful for us sometimes.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Yeah.
Run into issues. So definitely check that out. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. Don't forget emaildesignpodcast.com. All these things we talked about, we link them in the show notes. So check them out there. Also catch every single past episode, catch up. And you can subscribe to the podcast. We're on SoundCloud, YouTube, and iTunes. So as soon as the podcast drops, get notified right there. Tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast as well. You can also catch Jason and I there. We're following the conversation. And free 14-day trial of Litmus. Just go to litmus.com/giftcard and put the coupon code podcast. See ya.